Hello, and welcome to Rethinking Legal Ops, a podcast by Speed Legal. I'm Ishwari Saxena, and here we talk to legal experts, industry leaders, and innovators about the many ways that legal tech is transforming the way we practice law. Today we have with us a wonderful guest, Giuseppe. He is the partner at 42 Law Firm, and then he's also the founder of LT42, which is a legal tech company. He's a data privacy expert and is also an adjunct professor at Politecnico di Torino. It's so nice to have you here, Giuseppe. Really looking forward to the conversation.
Many thanks to you, and thanks for the opportunity. I'm really excited to have this kind of conversation because I'm amazed about your podcast and all this kind of stuff that you do with Speed Legal.
Thank you, Giuseppe. And today we're mostly going to be talking about data privacy and its relationship with legal tech because you have extensive experience in data ethics and protection. So I'm really looking forward to asking you some of these questions that our listeners really would like to get your insights on. To just kick things off, I'm very curious to hear more about what your professional journey has been so far. What led you to working, founding LT42 and working at 42 Law Firm?
Okay, from a professional point of view, I started to work as an attorney in the Milan Bar in 2000. And then I immediately understood that technology was a part of my life. So I was involved in 2008 in an important trial, and I had the opportunity to assist Google. And from that period of time start my professional activity since 2018, because I assisted a lot of US company, especially from a criminal side, because I'm a criminal lawyer, even if now I also am a data protection and cybersecurity attorney. But at the beginning, I was a criminal lawyer. In 2018, I understood two things, that the GDPR, the General Data Protection Regulation, could change the life of the European legislation and the European legal activity. And the second thing that I understood was that I have to create a legal tech company, because it was the time to make new experiment. Even if I was really connected to technology, I didn't create any kind of company like a legal tech company. And in 2018, I start with this project, and we start to produce some compliance software and some tools. And then in 2020, we decided to create a law firm. In 2018, I worked in another law firm, and the name of the law firm is the same of the legal tech, is 42. That is the answer at all the questions in the world. I don't know if you know the quote in the mesh.
Great. Wow. What an interesting journey. And that's such a interesting path, like going from like criminal law into data protection. Like there's a very clear connection, but yeah, that's a very interesting interesting journey. And what were some of the things that working at Google, like what were some of like the biggest, maybe most exciting challenges that you saw in data privacy that led you to want to work more in this field?
It's a complex question, especially when you mention Google and privacy in the same sentence. It's a little bit a problem sometimes, especially for a European citizen that also had the opportunity to study law. No, I'm joking, obviously. Google is a great company. I've learned a lot about the organization, the new way of thinking, just the way of the organized products, because I've learned from Google that it's most important every time the engineering side, the products. So they always say it's important, the legal part. And we have to consider the legal parts and the risk. And we have to consider also the commercial aspect and also the marketing aspect. But at the top, there is the products. And it's always true, because when you think at also a legal tech project, you have to think that the basis is the products. Obviously, when you completely forget to consider the compliance and the legal issue, you risk a lot, because you risk to create wonderful products, but with a lot of legal problems that can stop at a certain point the development of these projects. So I think that we need to consider both. But Google, for me, was a wonderful experience because I understood that the products is always at the top.
Absolutely. And when you started, you know, LT42, as a legal tech company, I want to dive a little bit deeper into, like, you know, just like the connection between, you know, data privacy and, you know, product development and legal tech. But before that, just want to ask you, what are some of the biggest legal tech trends happening in Europe right now?
Okay, it's a hard question because we have to consider that the scenario. I want to present the European scenario that is completely different from the US scenario. Just figure out that the number, some stats. I think that from the ABA, I've seen the statistics, and there are about 1.3 million attorneys in all US. In Europe, we have basically the same. We have 1.1 million attorneys, but the crazy issue that we have 250,000 attorneys in Italy, 160,000 attorneys in Germany, 160,000 attorneys in Spain. So you have three countries, you know that we are 27 countries in Europe, that has the half of all the attorneys in Europe. So you have a different scenario in Europe. You have completely different also need. We can also say that the United States, I had the opportunity to stay in Stanford for 1 year in 2010, so I know a little bit your wonderful country, and I know that there is a huge difference between Silicon Valley and Texas and another wonderful place in US. But again, in Europe, from a legal standpoint, there is really, really different need. So you have to consider this. So when you ask me what is the most important legal trends, I can answer you and I will answer you, but you have to consider that we are in a situation where the need that we have in Italy are completely different of between the respect of the need that we have in Lithuania, or you have also in UK, for example, that now is not a part of the European Union, but in a certain sense, until 2 years ago, it was a part of the European Union. And then I go back to your answer. The trends that we have is that now the most important legal tech software are two. The legal tech company that work on contract and so for example like Speed Legal, we have Euro that perhaps you know, JURO, and that is really most important. I think that is the most important also regarding revenue, and we have also some trend on the marketplace. So, for example, we have Hugo, that is H-U-G-O, dot legal, that, and there are other companies that I can present you more, but you ask me just the main trend. But I would want also to present some European legal tech company, because it's interesting also to go in depth. But in general terms, we have these two trends, contracts and marketplace, and this is quite interesting because we have a lot of regulation in the deontologic ethic code in every single bar in the single country, but now the marketplace is something that in Europe goes very well. Also in Italy we have some interesting projects, for example for Silegal, and it's a new trend. So why I think that we work not with new technology like AI or blockchain. We have some project on AI blockchain, obviously, but it's not the main part for two reasons, basically. Because the first is that we don't have budget, and so we cannot afford the AI. And connected to the budget is also the problem of the language, because apart from English, we have UK obviously, but we don't have so many artificial intelligence that work in Italian or in France or in French, sorry, or in Spanish. Spanish is a little bit different, so we have this second point, and then that we have so many attorney can offer their products without artificial intelligence. The situation in US, and then I finish, is a little bit different, I think, because you have a lot of attorney, 1.3 million, but at the same time you have not so many law firm. There is this enormous law firm from our side, are enormous, because you have 2,000, 3,000, 4,000 employee in that law firm. In Europe, you have a lot of little law firm, apart from UK, that now is not also part of European Union. And so you also, this create a different market, because you have a lot of attorney that have a lot of time, because they are not organized, and so they are not able to have the client that the big US law firm has. So this is another important difference, and another answer why we have not so many artificial intelligence and not so many technology on legal tech, like US, obviously.
I see. That is very interesting. And like the level of opportunity that you're describing, it sounds incredible. But like, would you put it at, do you think it's like just culturally, you know, amongst like legal practitioners, like legal tech is not something that's like trusted or as much, or is there like you know, just because like I usually come from India, and in India when you talk about like automating any legal work, everyone's just like, no, we don't trust AI, you know. So it's a little bit of that like cultural barrier as well. And then apart from that, like there is some of the work that's just like, it's so bespoke, it's so like, you know, it has to be so sort of like custom tailored for every single client, that it's hard to create like ML models with, you know, sort of more uniform with like more uniform types of like templates, or, you know, automating contract reviews. It's a bit of those two. In India, is it similar in Italy when we talk about barriers?
Yeah, I totally agree with you. There is a matter of trust, and like you give me the opportunity also to use another word that I really like, that is the social proof effect that we need to have in the legal tech products. Basically, in a lot of project where I was involved, I think that the attorney always said to me, yes, but I don't trust you, because there is no an attorney that has worked on this project. And then when I say, but I am an attorney, I have this experience, I say, okay. So I think that it's really important to humanize in a certain sense, and to create a strong connection between the law firm and the attorney with the legal tech products. We have in Italy a company that is called Ubenda. It's one of the most important, or perhaps is the most important legal tech company, but they don't have, I would say, a testimonial like an attorney. So I know that this seems a little bit strange, because at the very end, the important is the products, as I said before. But I think that in Europe, we need to have this social proof. We need to explain that there are many different form of it, artificial intelligence, coming back to your point. So perhaps when we talk about NLP, natural language processing, that I know that you use in your products, is something that is not so strong as other kind of artificial intelligence that could create ethical and also the data protection problem, because they also arrive at an evaluation, and also they could create a legal effect with their processing. And also the algorithm is not clear, and we have all this problem of legal and ethical problem of AI. But at the same time, when we talk about some simple NLP processing to analyze a contract, for example, is done something that I don't think that creates any trouble, any ethical trouble. They only simplify the life of the attorney. But to explain this, you need to be an attorney in Europe. If you are an engineer and you say the same word, but you are not an attorney, I have experimented this, they don't trust you. And this is a problem, is a cultural problem, I think.
Yeah, no, I think you bring up a very, very important point where, you know, sometimes like legal tech products are products that we sell to, you know, in part lawyers, and then we also, you know, sell these products to like Speed Legal, for example, like we also sell to non-lawyers, but some of our lawyer clients, they could be our potential customer, but at the same time, they could also be like a barrier, right? Because if like a trust problem, they don't like trust the technology maybe as much, or like they just don't want to open up their legal documents to be reviewed by an AI or to be put into a system that they may not know, they may not understand entirely. And it does help to have that sort of personal touch, you know, with the potential client, or just like to talk through the process with them, like this is what is going to happen, like, you know, this is how we're GDPR compliant, or this is our process. Like, it's not saving any of your information, it's just simplifying your life. And in our experience, we have accomplished more with just that sort of, you know, like personal touch. And it reminds me a lot about some of the conversations I've had on this podcast with fintech in-house counsels, and they were talking about how with like fintech, you know, it was similar with the, you know, like the big banks earlier, like financial institutions that were just not comfortable with the idea of any sort of, you know, tech involvement in the type of work they were doing. And I find those parallels with legal tech as well. So it feels like it's, you know, a matter of time and people just get used to there being this technology. And I'm personally very, very excited about that time, which leads me to my next question to you, Giuseppe. When you're talking about this problem of the trust, and also just like the business model of, you know, legal tech companies in Europe, is that why you also, you have a law firm, and then like alongside that, you also have a legal tech company, or what is the norm in Europe as to how legal tech companies operate? Are they usually operating with a law firm or other lawyers, or do they also exist independently?
No, I think that it's normal. The norm and the normality is to have a legal tech company that is not connected to a law firm, even if a lot of law firm, also US law firm that are based also in Italy or in Europe, you know, big law firm like Baker and McKenzie, as Sherman and Sterling, there is a lot of law firm that has started a wonderful project, DLA Piper, for example, that has started a wonderful project in Europe, in Italy. So it's not the unique, my project is not unique, but I think that the most important legal tech company in Europe are not connected with law firm. And you, we needed to make a big distinction when we talk about this kind of scenario. The first distinction is central. I call it, even if it's not a definition that is you can find on Google, but I think that it's correct. There is some centralized legal tech, and there are decentralized legal tech. What does it mean? It means that when you talk about your Speed Legal, your legal tech company, a lot of legal tech company, Euro, Hugo, or whatever, Kira, Luminance, they are centralized. So basically, they use artificial intelligence, they use some, but they are normally centralized. There are some other projects that, for example, I mentioned Kleros, Kleros, that is a decentralized arbitration services for the disputes of the new economy. And this kind of project that I think that is a Romanian project has raised more about 20 million. I don't remember. You can go online and you can check because it's in the home page. But anyway, I think that all the blockchain and smart contract projects are another part of the legal tech scenario. So I wanted to start with this kind of distinction because we have a scenario that is more connected to the law firm, to the corporation, that is the centralized project. Then there is this kind of other project that are really exciting because they work on big crypto asset, and they now we are talking about Web3 and metaverse and all this kind of stuff. So we have this kind of scenario that we need to consider. And I think that there are many, many interesting projects in Europe also about this. But from my professional experience, I work on the centralized side, I would say. Even if I study and I make consulting also on the centralized world, but my legal tech company is working on the centralized side.
I see, that makes sense. And then in Italy and also in Europe in general, there's a lot of startups coming up. You know, you are a founder yourself, and there's this a big like entrepreneurial spirit in the region. I've had the pleasure of meeting so many brilliant EU innovators. And where do you think legal tech is an ally for them? Because legal costs are expensive, not all startups can afford them. So do you see as legal tech being very effective and also supporting that type of innovation?
Okay, I think that there is a huge difference again between US and EU, also when we talk about legal fees, because in US generally the legal fees are a little bit higher respect and rather than European legal fees. But apart from that, I think that again it's a matter of culture. A lot of startups, as I told before, I want to repeat just for the person that didn't hear what I said before. I think that at the basis, on the basis of the top, there is the product. So we need to work. When I help a startup, I don't want to block the products, because sometimes arrived legal counsel and start to say, okay, you cannot do that, you cannot do that, you have to stop this kind of activity. And this is the wrong approach in my view, because you have to help the implementation of the products, but it's really important also the compliance. And what is the need that of the startup? I don't think that the startup wants to spend the cost is one of, yeah, obviously the cost is always one of the main reason, but I think the first startup is really important also the simplification, and that's why I think that legal tech could offer, for example, Speed Legal, but also a lot of other products could help a lot of startup, because the real need for a startup is not to save cost, but I think save time. It's more important, because when you have an idea, start the timer, and you always say, okay, it lasted 1 month and I didn't do that, 2 months, 3 months, and you start to be anxious because you want to have results. And we are in a world where you don't have the time to create a good products, and to create a good products, especially after 4 years of experience in legal with my legal tech, I tell you the truth, we need time. My tool, I have one tool that I think I am quite proud about that, and we take 2 years to make this kind of project. When they say to you that you have to produce a tool in 3 months, it's impossible basically. Even if the tool is simple, because you have to test, to make a to retest, to finalize and all this stuff. And so the real important word is not cost effective, but say time effective. And so the legal tech startup can have, legal tech, sorry, company can help startups to save time. Simplification, also regarding some aspect of the compliance, we are expert on GDPR, but also on AML, so the money laundering compliance, and all this stuff are really, really important.
Absolutely. And which is a great segue into my next question. You know, how do you think legal tech products can help companies strengthen their data protection infrastructure and also become more GDPR compliant?
Okay, I think that it's a complex question, because we need to help startup and in general company when regarding the first and most important point is not the privacy or privacy, when you want to use the UK pronunciation, as we always know like the privacy policy and all this stuff. I think that the first point is the Article 32 of GDPR, that is a cybersecurity point. The data protection is really important when we talk about this kind of measure that we need to implement to put in a safe way the data, because when we work on the legal tech side, we have also to manage sensitive data, confidential data, and particular categories of data, if you want to use the definition of the GDPR. So we need to protect this data, and we need to have a correct measure, adequate measure, and this is really important. Then we have the privacy by design and by default principle. Again, we need to respect the product, but at the same time, we need also to respect the compliance. So we need to work on data retention. And also the other thing that we need to think at the beginning is the way to answer at the data request. We have a specific discipline in Europe regarding the data request that could be made by data subject. So we need to implement tools that help the way to give the data to data subject. Because when you start, especially in the B2C project, it's really important that you have a clear idea since the beginning to implement this kind of point. And then obviously you need to give information and activity regarding the data processing activities. The privacy policy, obviously, it's really important, and we have a lot of software that could create automation on privacy policy. And then at the very end, and we're coming back to the marketplace software, the legal tech that we have in Europe, that is the DPO, the data protection officer, that now we can there are a lot of legal tech marketplace that offer you this kind of role that is quite expensive in a virtual way. So you can have a virtual data protection officer. That means that you have obviously a company that takes this role, but remotely in a really smart way. So I think that this is basically the most important point when we talk about data protection and legal tech and startups.
Great. Thank you for explaining that, Giuseppe. It's much more clear to me now, and especially from the perspective of SMEs and startups, it becomes even more important. And I want to just say, sort of end with the note of, you know, asking you what are your biggest hopes with 42 Law Firm and with LT 42 going in the future.
But regarding privacy or in general terms?
In general, what do you hope to what is your dream with your legal tech company?
Okay, my dreams is to have the time to make some experiment on legal tech. To tell you in two words, I think that in the US market, the evolution of legal tech is completely in a different way, in a different moment. You can also have some company that are really structured. The culture of legal tech is something that is in the hand of every single law firm. It can also be understood by the citizen thanks to the attorney. I know, I agree with you that sometimes the lawyer, the attorney can be a barrier, but there is a huge difference between US and Europe. So my dream, and that's why I want to help with my company, a lot of colleagues, a lot of attorneys, is that we need to change our approach. We need to go through a normal way to understand, to use the technology. We cannot think that technology is just the Office and Microsoft Word. We need to understand that we need the specific tool for our activity. So this is my dream: change the mind of my colleague. And as you know now we are 250,000, so it's a big mission just in Italy and also in Europe. And the second point is to and that's why I just finished a course and a certification on artificial intelligence and to use artificial intelligence software and tools, even if I'm an attorney, because I think that my dream is to use in an ethical way data protection. This is really, really, really important.
Thank you, Giuseppe. I'm very sure that under your leadership, both LT42 and the 42 law firm will prosper, and your mission to, you know, change the culture and communicate better with lawyers of the many benefits of legal tech really resonates with me and all of us at Speed Legal. And thank you so much for taking the time to be here today. We've gotten so many valuable insights, and I'm sure our listeners have really enjoyed this conversation. And at last but not least, thanks to all our listeners for tuning in every week. We'll be here next week again with another great speaker. So stay tuned in, and thank you for listening.
The practice of law is changing, and we're here for it. Thank you so much for tuning in for today's episode of Rethinking Legal Ops. Follow us for more such insightful conversations about the transformative impact of legal tech. Also, follow Speed Legal and let us know in your comments and messages about how you leverage legal tech solutions to make your work more efficient. See you next time.